are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Sri Sri Radha and
Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are very much enriched in understanding Lord Chaitanya and who are thus expert in narrating his transcendental qualities. They can purify all conditioned souls from the reactions of their sinful activities by pouring upon them transcendental songs about Govinda. As such, they are very expert in increasing the limits of the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are the saviors of the living entities from the devouring mouth of impersonal liberation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant. In order to deliver the poor conditioned souls, they accepted loincloths, treating themselves as mendicants, but they were always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and they bathed always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are always engaged in intensely worshipping Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in the transcendental land of Vrindavana, which is filled with peacocks and flocks of cooling swans, cuckoos and cranes. In Vrindavana, there are also beautiful trees full of fruits and flowers, and having roots inlaid with all invaluable jewels, with great delight the Goswamis bestow upon living entities the boon of the goal of life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who are engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord and bowing down in a scheduled measurement. In this way, they utilize their valuable lives, and in executing these devotional activities, they conquered over eating and sleeping, and were always meek and humble, enchanted by remembering the transcendental qualities of the Lord.
Priya, you want to do the last two? The last two? Page 24, the Shad Goswami Astakam. You might want to do the last two translations. Thank you so much, Brian. Yes, 24. Here is.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, that's the one, correct? Sri Jiva Goswami and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who were engaged in chanting the holy names of the Lord.
No problem.
I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who were sometimes on the bank of the Radha Kunda Lake, sometimes on the shores of the Yamuna, and sometimes in Vamshivata. At these places, they appear just like madmen in the full ecstasy of love for Krishna, exhibiting different transcendental symptoms in their bodies, and they were merged in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunatha Dasa Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopala Bhatta Goswami, who chanted very loudly everywhere in Vrindavana, shouting, O Queen of Vrindavana, Radharani, O Lalita, O son of Nanda Maharaja, where are you all now? Where are you all now? Are you just on the hill of Govardhana, or are you under the trees on the bank of the Yamuna? Where are you? These were their moods in executing Krishna consciousness.
Nice, thank you. So we'll sing the song. We were reading the translation before we could sing the song. So Actually, it's the prayers we have in the songbook are a little bit long, so we can open the Bhagavad Gita for and we can open page 1. So we'll go through these verses from page 1 on to page 2. And if you want to, we can all repeat together, and we can start. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpataru Bhayascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So thank you so much for coming for the class. Let's turn to chapter 9 of Gita. So let's turn to page. So we'll read the verse, fourth chapter, the ninth verse. We've been reading Ramayana, as I mentioned earlier, and it'll give us some flavor, some insight into, you know, what the activities of the Lord are and how they are different from what we do. So, page 204. Last. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. O Arjuna, purport by his divine grace, S.E. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation achieved Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahmajyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is a risk of returning to the material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to the mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Leela Anurakto Bhakta Vyapi Hridyantaratma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationship with his unalloyed devotees. Page 205. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in the philosophical speculation, attains the highest perfection stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tattvam Asi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, "You are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead," is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam eva vidyatvati mrityumeti nanyah panta vidyate yanayah. One can simply attain perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Shvetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently he will not attain salvation, simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey, or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way achieve perfection. So, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he incarnates according to a particular schedule. And the Lord himself said that whenever there is a decline in decline in the religion and increase in irreligious activities, then the Lord incarnates himself millennium after millennium. So the Lord has many forms. Ramadi Murti Shukalaniyamena Tishtan. And as Prabhupada mentions, Advaitam Achyutam Anadim Anantarupam, that the Lord has many forms, unlimited number of forms. And one of the forms that the Lord appeared was Lord Ramchandra, the famous hero. So, all the activities of Lord Ramchandra should be seen in that light. Janma Karma Chame Divyam. They are transcendental, and they are not having the tinge or inebriety of this material world, because the conditioned soul has a tendency to act under the modes of material nature, but the Lord has no need to act under the modes of material nature. As much as if you go and see a magic trick, for example, and the magician is creating this grand illusion and he's performing this wonderful trick, but the magician is never under the sway of illusion because he is the creator of that illusion. Similarly, Krishna, or the Lord, is the creator of Maya, and it is very unwise to argue that the Lord can fall into illusion of his own creation. So, with that introduction. We will continue reading Ramayana, which we have been doing for the last few days. So we have come to the stage where we are on page 236. That's what I was told, to start from 236. Sure, we can do that. We have a copy of Ramayana. Those who actually want to, like, you know, get a copy or, you know, buy a copy, it's highly recommended. Those who already haven't got a copy, it's highly, highly recommended. It's at a very discounted price, and what is $20 plus shipping has been coming at $15, including shipping and handling, the final price. So we have some copies. Those who want to get the copies, it's highly recommended. So sure, for those who want to have a copy, why not? But it's better, okay. Page 236. So just to give a brief synopsis till now what has happened is that we went through birth of Lord Ram and his growing up, his marrying of Sita, then his mother, one of his mothers, or mother of Bharata, she wanted to get boons from the king, and she got those boons, and Rama is now banished to the forest. Now in the forest, his wife Sita is kidnapped, and Lord Ram is completely, utterly devastated that his wife is kidnapped, and he's out in search with his wife. We find that they come and they try to follow the trail of Sita. They meet Jatayu, and then they go to the mountain Kabanda, and they deliver the mountain. And then the mountain says, mountain is actually a demigod. They says, why don't you get an alliance with Sugriva? And so they are now at this point where they go and they try to meet Sugriva, because Sugriva is living in constant fear of his brother, who's sworn enemy, out to kill him. And when Lord Ram and Lord Lakshman go into the forest trying to meet Sugriva, they find that Hanuman is disguised as a Brahman, and he comes to Lord Ram and he says, you know, who are you? And then Lord explains himself, and Hanuman reveals his actual position, and then he takes Lord Ram and Lakshman to Sugriva, and then we are here. So they make a pact that Lord Ram and Sugriva make a pact that they will be friends forever, and they become allies. And Sugriva here, as we stop, you know, Sugriva says to Lord Ram, you know, my brother Vali is very powerful, and I have seen his strength. Not sure you can match his strength. And then, you know, then Lord Ram is right now in the process of proving his second test. The first test was to kind of throw away all the skeletons of that Mayavi demon, and then Lord Ram effortlessly kicks all those skeletons and throws away to a distance of 80 miles. And the second test, we'll see what's the second test. Reading on the top from page 236. Sugriva was impressed, but he still remained doubtful. He said to Ram, you have thrown the dried up bones of Dundubi, but he was hurled by Vali when still a carcass full of flesh and blood. O Ram, forgive me, but there is another test I should like to witness. Sugriva showed Rama and Lakshmana 7 salt trees, each more than 30 arms length in diameter. In the past, Vali had easily broken down many such trees. Sugriva asked Rama to show his strength by piercing one of those trees right through with an arrow. Rama smilingly took his bow and strung it, placing on the string a dreadful-looking arrow. He took aim and released the arrow, which passed cleanly through all the 7 trees. The arrow, gilded with gold, entered the earth and descended into the subterranean regions. Forcing its way back up and out of earth, it entered Rama's quiver. Sugriva was astonished and fell flat on the ground at Rama's feet. He considered Vali as good as slain. Kneeling before Rama, he said, "You could kill with your arrows the gods and demons combined. Who can stand before you in battle? With you as my ally, my grief has totally dried up. O Rama, let's go quickly and make short work of Vali." Rama agreed, and they all left for Kishkindha. Rama told Sugriva to go ahead and challenge Vali to a fight, and he would wait nearby. When Vali came out of the city, Rama would kill him. Sugriva stood outside Kishkindha and began to roar. Vali heard this, his brother, and rushed out to fight. The two monkeys began a tumultuous and terrible combat that resembled a clash between Mars and Mercury in the heavens. Blinded by anger, they threw blows like thunderbolts at each other. Striking with their fists, palms, and feet, they pummeled each other, screaming with fury. Rama watched closely, bow in hand. He could not distinguish who was who. The two monkey brothers resembled each other closely, like the twin Ashwini gods. Rama did not therefore release his arrow for the fear of hitting Sugriva. Vali soon got the upper hand, and the battered Sugriva ran for his life. He dashed back to the Rishyamukha, closely followed by Vali, who stopped at the edge of the forest near to the Matanga's hermitage, saying, "Today you are spared." Sugriva lay gasping on the ground as Rama ran up to him. The monkey looked at Prince in surprise. "Why did you not say truthfully that you had no intention of slaying Vali? Look at me now. I have been half killed by that fearful ape. O Rama, had I known you were reluctant, I would not have moved from this place." Rama consoled Sugriva, explaining that he was unable to distinguish the monkey from his brother. Their features, dress, and ornaments were too similar. He suggested that Sugriva again challenge Vali, but this time wearing some distinctive mark so that Rama could tell one from other. Lakshmana tied around Sugriva's neck a flowering creeper. Reassured, Sugriva got up and left again for Kishkindha. Lakshmana and Sugriva strode in front, followed by Rama, Hanuman, and other three monkeys. They soon reached the gate, and again Sugriva went to the gates. He looked at Rama, still feeling fearful. The beating from Vali had shaken him. Rama saw Sugriva's anxious expression. He took the monkey by his shoulders and said, "Do not hesitate. Vali will presently roll in dust, struck by my arrow. I have never uttered a falsehood, even though I have been in adversity for a long time. Let go your mighty shout, O Sugriva, and Vali will quickly proceed to the spot. How can he brook a challenge in the presence of women? This shall be his last battle, and indeed his last day on earth." Sugriva accepted Rama's firm assurance. While the two princes remained concealed in a clump of bushes, he again began to shout out his challenge. His roar rent the air pitilessly. Animals fled confused in all directions like women assailed by wicked men due to the failure of leaders to protect them. Birds dropped from the sky like gods whose pious merits have been exhausted. As Sugriva emitted his fierce cry, he sounded like an ocean lashed by a gale. Vali was in his inner chambers with his wives. Hearing Sugriva's challenge, he sat up in surprise. How had his brother returned so soon? Was he not satisfied with one thrashing? This time there was no escape from that arrogant monkey. Vali was seized with fury. His limbs trembled and his eyes turned crimson. Grinding his teeth, he leapt from his bed and ran towards the door. His wife Tara, seeing him about to go, ran to him and held his arm. Her womanly intuition told her something was wrong. She spoke fearfully. "My lord, shake off this anger. Do not enter another combat with Sugriva. Although you are more powerful than your brother, I nevertheless feel misgivings. How has Sugriva become so fearless, even though he was only just beaten by you? Why does he now stand there roaring like a monsoon cloud? Surely he has found a powerful ally." Vali stopped and looked at his beautiful wife.
She told him that she had heard how Sugriva had formed a friendship with two princes from Ayodhya. Tara described the power and glory of Lord Ram, which she had heard described by Angada, Vali's son. Rama was unassailable in the battle and capable of crushing vast armies. He was the supreme resort for the afflicted and had given an assurance of safety to Sugriva. The Vanara queen begged her husband not to go out and fight. Instead, he should welcome Sugriva and install him as prince regent. Tara implored her husband, "I consider Sugriva to be your foremost friend. You need not maintain this animosity. Bring him close with gifts and kind words. Along with Rama, he will prove your greatest ally. O valiant monarch, please do not enter another combat with Sugriva, for I fear it will be your last." Gripped by death, Vali could not accept his wife's advice. He reproached her as he stood before him weeping. "How can I tolerate this insolence? For a warrior who has never known defeat, brooking an insult is worse than death. I am not able to stand the arrogance of the weak Sugriva, much less his roar. O timid one, I shall not tarry any longer. Sugriva shall meet his end today." Vali told Tara she need not fear on Ram's account. He knew about the human prince. Rama was devoted to virtue and piety. He would never commit the sin of killing an innocent person. Nor could he intervene in a fair fight of others. Vali ordered Tara to stay in the palace. He was going out to face Sugriva and would soon return, having either killed his brother or sent him flying in fear. The queen bowed her head and, praying for her husband, returned sorrowfully to her rooms. Filled with rage and breathing heavily, Vali rushed out of the city gates. He saw Sugriva standing firm like a mountain, his reddish body glowing like fire. Vali tightened his loincloth. Raising his fist, he charged furiously at his brother, shouting, "This iron-like fist hurled at you like a mace will return you after taking your life." Remembering his brother's treatment of him, Sugriva was also worked up with anger. He threw a great punch at the onrushing Vali. The two monkeys clashed together, roaring like maddened bulls. Struck a swinging blow on chest by Vali's two clenched hands, Sugriva vomited blood and looked like a mountain covered with cascades of red oxides. He tore up a sal tree and dashed his brother over the head. Vali shook like a ship tossed in the ocean. He fell upon Sugriva and began pounding him with his knees and fists. The two monkeys fought fiercely and gradually Vali once more gained the upper hand. Sugriva, his vanity shattered, began fearfully looking about for Rama. He was becoming weaker and weaker. From behind the bush, Rama saw his chance. Vali stood over his collapsed brother, his arms upraised. Rama swiftly placed an arrow on his bow and released it with sounds resembling a crash of thunder. The arrow sped like a streak of lightning and hit Vali on his breast, sounding like another thunderclap. Vali fell to the ground like a hewn tree, uttering a great cry. He lay unconscious with his brother bathed in blood. Although struck by Rama's powerful arrow, the monkey did not die. And as he was wearing a gold chain Indra had given him, by Indra's blessing, that chain was capable of preserving the life of whoever wore it. Lying there with scattered garments and shining ornaments, and the glowing arrow of Rama protruding from his chest, Vali looked up. Vali looked like a colorful banner that had suddenly dropped to the ground. Rama and Lakshmana slowly approached the mortally wounded monkey. Vali opened his eyes and looked at Rama, who was smiling at him. The fallen monkey spoke with difficulty. "You are famous for your truth and virtue, O Rama. How then have you committed such an abominable act? What was my crime that I should be punished this way? I did not attack you. Indeed, I was engaged in a fair combat with another. Why then have you killed me, remaining concealed at a distance?" Vali accused Rama of irreligion, saying that he only posed as a virtuous person. This heinous deed surely proved him to be otherwise. He had lost control of his mind and senses, and overcome by desire and swayed by sentiment. Out of friendship for Sugriva, he had abandoned his righteousness. Gasping for breath, Vali went on, "I cannot understand why have you acted in this way, O Rama. What did you have to gain by killing me, a mere monkey living in the forest on wild fruits? The scriptures condemn the eating of monkey flesh or the using of their skins. There was no reason to slay me. I have done you no harm at all. Surely this act will be condemned by all holy men and you will go to hell." Vali censured Rama at length, speaking passionately. After some time, he closed his eyes and fell back exhausted. He felt regret. Why had he not listened to Tara? She had tendered him wise advice. By ignoring her, he had reaped the results of his impetuosity. The arrow in his chest burned like fire, and Vali was shocked. How could the virtuous Rama perpetrate such a vile deed? Rama waited for Vali to regain little strength. When the monkey again opened his eyes, Rama said, "O Vali, you clearly do not understand the righteousness and religion. This entire earth belongs to the descendants of Manu, having been bequeathed to them by that great deity and speaker of religious code. Bharata now rules this world, and we, his brothers, are his servants. It's thus our duty to roam the earth, promoting virtue and punishing the wicked. You, O proud monkey, are indeed wicked." Rama then explained to Vali the rules of morality. The younger brother should be regarded as one's own son, and his wife as one's daughter-in-law. Vali therefore had been guilty of a great sin in punishing the sinless Sugriva and cohabiting with his wife, with Ruma, Sugriva's wife. The scriptures prescribe death as punishment for one who has illicit sexual relations with his own daughter or a wife of his younger brother. There was no doubt that Rama's punishing him was just. Rama continued to address the pain-stricken Vali. "You are now freed from the sinful reaction which would have sent you to hell. A person punished by the king is released from all sins and ascends to heaven. But if the king fails to punish a sinner, then he himself incurs the sin. O Vali, you should not grieve, for you have been fortunate to receive the proper punishment, making you eligible for higher planets after death. Nor did I act wrongly by remaining concealed. Since you are a monkey, this was the appropriate way to kill you. Just as when hunting the king shoots arrow at animals while hidden from you, so I shot you." Vali could not argue. He had always felt remorseful for the way he had treated Sugriva, but had denied those feelings, remaining fiercely antagonistic towards his brother. Now he had finally received the result. All creatures had to accept the fruits of their own acts alone. No suffering or happiness came other than the result of one's former act. Understanding this, Vali accepted Rama's words as true and gave up his anger and grief. With difficulty he replied, "How can a dwarf argue with a giant? O Rama, you are the best knower of all religious principles. I am justly punished. Please forgive my harsh words spoken earlier out of sorrow and confusion. I have certainly strayed from the path of virtue." Vali feared that after his death, his brother Sugriva would be antagonistic towards his son Angada. He begged Rama to establish friendship between the two monkeys. Rama assured Vali that Sugriva would rule the Vanaras with righteousness, treating Angada like a younger brother. Vali lost consciousness. His life all but ended. At that moment, Tara ran out of the city, crying for her husband. She saw the monkeys who were Vali's followers running about in all directions, seized with fear of Rama. Tara stopped some of them and asked why they were fleeing. "Seeing there your mighty husband struck down by Rama's arrow," they replied, "death in the form of Rama is bearing him away. Leave quickly with us, for Sugriva will take over the city and drive us out, assisted by Rama's deadly arrows." Tara looked around and saw Vali lying on the ground. Nearby, Rama leant on his great bow. With a wail, she ran towards her fallen husband, beating her breast and head. She felt at Vali's feet. The lordly ape resembled a mountain struck down by Indra's thunderbolt. Crying out, "My lord!" She rolled about in agony. Angada also came there and dropped to the ground at his father's feet, overwhelmed with grief. Tara lamented loudly, "Get up, O tiger among monkeys! Why do you not greet me? Come with me now and lay upon your excellent couch. The bare ground is no place for a king to lay. Alas, it's obvious the earth is more dear to you than myself, for you lie there embracing her with your outstretched arms. What shall I do? Where shall I go? I am lost." Crying like a female osprey, the intelligent Tara thought how her husband had banished Sugriva and stolen his wife. Surely this was the fruit of those sinful deeds. How could she live now as a widow under the care of Sugriva, Vali's enemy? What would happen to her dear son Angada? Tara held Vali's feet, who still lay unconscious and was barely breathing. Hanuman gently comforted Tara. "This is the sure end of everybody, O gentle lady. All of us shall reap the results of our own deeds, only good or bad. As such, we gain nothing and do nothing for others by lamenting. Vali has reached the end of his allotted lifespan and will now rise to the higher regions. Do not grieve." Tara cried out in pain. She had no desire to live without Vali. Laying next to her husband, she determined to fast until death, following the path taken by Vali. As Tara sobbed, Vali opened his eyes and looked slowly about. Seeing Sugriva, he spoke to him affectionately. "Oh brother, please forgive my evil acts against you. Destiny did not decree that we should share the happiness together. Accept now the rulership of the monkeys. I shall soon depart for Yamraja's abode." Vali asked his brother to be kind to Angada. He also asked Sugriva carefully protect Tara, always seeking her advice on important matters. Rama's order should be followed closely, and Sugriva should always seek to please him. Sugriva, feeling despondent, nodded in assent to Vali's instruction. Vali then took off his celestial gold chain and gave it to Sugriva. Turning to Angada, he said in a whisper, "Dear son, I shall now depart from this world. Remain ever devoted to Sugriva's service, seeing him as you do myself." With his eyes rolling in pain and his teeth exposed, Vali gave up his life. His head fell to the side as his last breath gasped out. A great howl of sorrow went up from the many monkeys who stood surrounding Vali. "Alas, our lord is gone. Who will protect us now? Who can equal Vali in strength and splendor?" Tara and Angada embraced Vali's body, wailing loudly. Sugriva was filled with remorse. He went before Rama and said, "I am a wretch who has caused the death of my own brother. Although he was capable, my brother never killed me. But at the first opportunity, I have had him slain. How can I take this kingdom now, stained as it is with Vali's blood? How can I tolerate seeing Tara and Angada weeping bitterly on my account?" Sugriva became overwhelmed by his feelings. He felt sure that he would reap terrible results of the sin of fratricide and indeed the killing of a king. Vali was noble and had ruled the monkeys with justice and compassion. Having killed him, Sugriva was not fit himself to become a monarch. Everyone would simply condemn him. His only recourse was to enter fire along with the body of his brother. Sugriva begged Rama's permission to give up his life. The other monkeys could assist Rama in finding Sita. Rama was moved to tears upon hearing Sugriva's piteous lamentations. As he considered the monkey's sorrowful words, Tara approached him and said, "O all-powerful one, I too shall enter the fire along with Vali. I have no desire for life without my husband. Surely he will miss me even amongst the apsaras in heaven, for I have always been his most devoted servant." Tara begged Rama to kill her with one arrow
which had slain Vali. O Rama, the wife is always considered one with her husband. Therefore, you need not fear the sin of killing a woman. You will be only completing the task of killing Vali by taking my life. I cannot tolerate the pain of separation from my spouse. Surely you know only too well what a terrible pain is like. What that terrible pain is like. Rama looked compassionately at Tara, who had fallen to the ground. He consoled her most gently. O wife of a hero, do not think in this way. This entire creation yields happiness and distress, one after another, for all created beings, in accord with their destiny. Where will you go to avoid your fate? Be peaceful here. Having duly mourned for your husband, you will soon enjoy as much delight under Sugriva's protection as you did with Vali. Your son will become the prince regent and you will be honored. All this is ordained by providence. O Tara, the wives of hero never lament as you are doing now. Rama instructed Tara according to the moral codes which apply to her race. On the death of her husband, she should accept his brother as her spouse and serve him as she had Vali. Tara became silent, gazing at Rama, who now turned to Sugriva to comfort him. Sorry, till what time is the clock? Can the reading go on?
Oh, we can, yes, I think it's at 4:45.
Okay, thank you. Rama told Sugriva not to take heart and, Rama told Sugriva to take heart and attend to Vali's funeral. The soul of the Monkey King would not be helped by simply grieving for him. The time for grieving must soon end and duties must be performed. Rama said gravely, Time controls everything. Vali has succumbed to all-powerful time, going to the regions he has earned by his own acts. Now time is urging you to perform your religious duty towards your brother. Sugriva stood looking at Rama. His mind was bewildered with grief and remorse. Lakshmana took hold of the monkey's arms and told him to proceed with Vali's cremation. Lakshmana gave detailed instructions to confuse Sugriva. Hearing the prince speak, Sugriva's attendant ran to carry out the orders. Rama again spoke to the grieving Tara. O Vanara queen, carefully consider whether or not this dead body of Vali was ever related to you. It is nothing but a collection of inert chemicals. The real person is the soul, not the body. In ignorance only do we form relationship based on bodily consideration, calling others husband, son, or friend. Rama explained that the soul is without designations. It's eternal and dwells only for a short time in the body. During our brief sojourn in our bodies, we form so many illusory relationships. But all of these will undoubtedly be broken by the force of time. The soul's real happiness lies in its relationship with God. Vali had now moved closer to that eternal relationship, and no one need lament for him. As Rama spoke, Vali's grieving relatives felt relief. Gathering themselves together, they prepared for Vali's funeral. A beautiful wooden palanquin was fetched. Vali's body was carefully laid on it, and it was lifted up by 8 powerful monkeys. Vali looked like a fallen god. The palanquin was adorned by numerous carvings of birds, trees, and fighting soldiers. Over its top was lattice work, covered with a net and many garlands and jeweled ornaments. The side of the palanquins were daubed with red sandal paste and lotus flowers were laid out along its edges. Sugriva and Angada bore the palanquin along with other monkeys. Sugriva had regained his composure and he issued orders to the monkeys. Walk ahead of us, scattering the ground with jewels of every description. Let learned monkeys recite scriptures and we shall proceed slowly to the cremation ground. The procession moved off, heading towards the river bank. A great veil was sent up by the many females who walked in front. Gradually they came to the river and a funeral pyre was built on its bank. The palanquin was set down next to the pyre and Tara again fell to the ground, crying mournfully, O hero, why do you not cast your glance upon me today? See here your wives all weeping
who have trodden the long path behind you. Here are your ministers sunk in a sea of dejection. O Wali, dismiss your counselors now as you did in the past. Then we shall sport together, intoxicated with love. The other woman gently raised Tara, who was overwhelmed with sorrow. With the help of Sugriva and the weeping Angada, they lifted Wali's body onto the pyre. Angada then lit the pyre and walked around his father, who had set out on his journey to the next world. All others joined him in a slowly circumambulating the blazing pyre. Everyone entered the river and offered sacred water to the Wali's soul. After the obsequies were performed, Sugriva and his counselors surrounded Rama and Lakshmana. Hanuman, who resembled a golden peak of Mount Meru, folded his hands and said to Rama, "By your grace, O Raghava, has Sugriva acquired this ancestral kingdom of the Vanaras. Please enter the city of Kishkindha in state, and with your permission, we'll perform the coronation ceremony." Rama looked stern as he replied, "Commanded by my father, I shall not even enter a village for 14 years, much less a city. You may proceed into the city and duly install Sugriva as your king. I shall remain outside, finding some suitable cave for my residence." Rama instructed Sugriva to remain in Kishkindha for the coming few months. It was the beginning of the monsoon season, so it would be impossible to search for Sita. When the rains ended, Sugriva should dispatch the monkeys in all directions to look for Ravana and the princess. Sugriva took leave of Rama and went to his city, which was situated within a vast mountain cave. In accordance with the scriptural injunctions, a grand coronation ceremony was performed. Everyone repeatedly extolled Rama and Lakshmana, feeling honored by the friendship of two princes from Ayodhya. Sugriva was reunited with his wife Ruma, and he entered Wali's magnificent palace. Awaiting the end of the rainy season, he lived happily surrounded by his wives and ministers. Chapter 12. Any comments? Chapter 12. The search begins. Rama and Lakshmana moved to the nearby Mount Prashravana and sought out a large cave close to the summit. They settled in, spending their time talking together and performing sacrifice. But Rama's mind rarely left Sita. His only consolation was to describe her qualities to Lakshmana. He longed for the rainy season to end so that he could search for his beloved wife. Gradually, the rains subsided. The sky cleared and the resonant cries of cranes filled the air. Although the monsoons were over, however, Sugriva still did not prepare his army to search for Sita. Realizing this, Rama discussed the situation with Lakshmana. "It seems the Vanara king has forgotten his debt to us, noble brother. Why have his messengers not arrived here with the news of their search? Oh Lakshmana, I fear that the gentle Sita is lost forever. What is she doing now? Surely her mind dwells on me, even as mine never leaves her. Surely she weeps in agony, even as I weep here." Rama's grief was as strong as it had been when Sita was abducted 4 months ago. Rama felt powerless. He was still no closer to finding Sita than the day she was kidnapped, and now Sugriva, upon whom his hopes were resting, was letting him down. Rama sat distracted by sorrow, and Lakshmana reassured him, "This is not the time to grieve, dear brother. We must strenuously exert ourselves to find Sita. With you as her protector, no one can hold the princess for long. Compose yourself, Rama. Let's do what must be done." Rama sighed and looked around. On the plateau beneath his cave, a large pond had been formed by rains. Swans and cranes sported joyfully in the water amongst the clusters of white and red lotuses. Rama could hear the croak of frogs and the cries of peacocks. In the distance, he heard the trumpeting sound of elephants in rut. Large black bees droned around the bright forest flowers, intoxicated with nectar. The sky was a deep blue, and the wind, which had blown fiercely during the monsoons, had become a gentle breeze. The sight and the sounds of autumn were visible everywhere. Rama was reflective. Where was Sugriva? Had he forgotten his promise now that his own problem had been solved? How could he be so ungrateful? Rama's brow furrowed with anger as he turned to Lakshmana. These past 4 months have seemed like 100 years for me. I have longed for the end of the rains, O Lakshmana, so that we might find Sita as we agreed with Sugriva. Although I have rendered him a great favor, the evil-minded monkey king obviously holds me in contempt. Seeing me forlorn and deprived of my kingdom, living helplessly like an ascetic in the forest, the wicked fellow entirely disregards me. Rama told Lakshmana to go to Kishkindha. He should tell Sugriva that there is no viler being than one who is ungrateful. Had he forgotten the favor Rama had done for him and the promise he had made in return? Did he wish to again see Rama's golden bow drawn to its full length? Did he desire to see Rama angry on the battlefield? Did he long to hear the crash of Rama's bowstring surrounding like so many claps of thunder? It was strange that Sugriva seemed to have forgotten how Vali was slain by a single arrow from Rama, although Sugriva himself never could overcome his brother. Rama's eyes were crimson with anger as he spoke. It is clear that Sugriva is lost in sensual pleasures, having regained his kingdom after a long time. Drunk and surrounded by women, he has all but forgotten his pledged word to me. Tell him, O brother, that the path taken by Vali still lies open. Along with his kinsmen, Sugriva may proceed along the path if he does not care for his promise. He should take heed of this warning, otherwise he will meet again soon with Vali. Lakshmana himself became furious as he listened to Rama. He told Rama that he would immediately go to Kishkindha. With upraised weapons, he would dispatch Sugriva to death's abode. Clearly, the licentious and unvirtuous Sugriva was not fit to rule a kingdom. Angada should be installed as king, and he could organize a search for Sita. Sugriva should be punished without delay. Lakshmana stood up as he reached for his weapons. Rama, whose anger had already begun to subside, then checked his brother. I think it is not fit that you kill Sugriva. Try at first to pursue a gentler path. Remind him of our friendship and his promise, O Lakshmana, and do not use harsh words immediately. After all, Sugriva is but a monkey. Perhaps you can awaken him to a sense of his duty by conciliatory speech. Lakshmana bowed in assent to Rama's words, although he could not subdue his anger. He left the cave and began running towards Kishkindha, thinking of what he would say to Sugriva. He could not disobey Rama's order, but he would not tolerate any resistance from Sugriva. If that lazy monkey did not immediately set about his duty, he would be sorry. How dare he be so negligent of his promise to Rama? Who did he think he was? Lakshmana bit his lips in fury as he bounded down the mountainside. In the city of Kishkindha, Hanuman had also noticed the season change and Sugriva not stirring. The intelligent minister thought carefully about the situation. Rama would certainly take stern action if Sugriva failed to fulfill his pledge. Hanuman approached the Vanara king, who was absorbed in sensuality, and spoke to him in a friendly and pleasing manner. You have regained your sovereignty, fame, and prosperity, O Sugriva. It now remains for you to win the goodwill of your allies. The dominion, fame, and glory of a king who acts well towards his allies will always grow. That king who regards equally his exchequer, his army, his allies, and his own self will gain a great kingdom. However, he who fails to take care of any one of these meets with disaster. Hanuman then reminded Sugriva of his promise to Rama. The time had arrived to begin the search for Sita. The king should immediately send out monkeys in all directions. Rama should not need to ask. It would be shameful if Sugriva did not act quickly to repay a debt to his friend and ally. Sugriva thanked Hanuman for his wise and timely advice. The monkey king realized his laxity and immediately summoned all his ministers and counselors. He issued orders, "Let all the Vanara generals be quickly assembled. Swift-footed and energetic monkeys are needed. 10,000 of my army should be immediately depart for every country where Vanaras dwell. Have them fetch the very best of the monkey warriors here to Kishkindha. Anyone sent out and failing to return within 15 days should be executed." Ordering Hanuman and Angada to organize the army, Sugriva again retired to his rooms. With a few days, the monkey hordes began to assemble outside city. Monkeys resembling elephants, mountains and clouds gathered together. Those powerful Vanaras were like mighty tigers and were all heroic. They were dark and terrible and they made one another's hair stand erect just to see them. Some were as strong as 100 elephants, some 10 times stronger than that, others 10 times stronger again. They stood awaiting Sugriva's order. As the monkeys milled about in their tens of thousands outside Kishkindha, they noticed Lakshmana approaching in distance. When they saw the prince running towards the city, his face glowing with anger and his bow grasped tightly, they became fearful. Some of them, not recognizing him, lifted up trees and boulders ready to defend Kishkindha. Others ran in all directions as Lakshmana arrived near the city gates, held aloft his bow and calling for Sugriva. Seeing the monkeys prepared to attack him, Lakshmana became even more angry. He heaved deep and burning sighs and licked the corners of his mouth. Angada quickly came out of the city and, checking the monkeys from fleeing, went before Lakshmana. Rama's brother appeared to the monkey prince like blazing fire of universal destruction. In great fear, he bowed low at Lakshmana's feet and greeted him respectfully. Although furious, Lakshmana contained his anger and spoke kindly to Angada. "Please tell Sugriva of my arrival, dear child. I stand here tormented by my grief due to Rama's plight. Please ask the king to hear from me Rama's advice." Angada bowed again and left swiftly, running to Sugriva. He burst into his chambers and told him to come quickly. But Sugriva was asleep, groggy from the night's pleasures. He lay upon his bed with only garlands as his dress. As he slowly stirred, many more monkeys came near his room, raising a great clamor. They were terrified of wrathful Lakshmana. Sugriva heard the tumult and came to his senses. He stood up, troubled in mind, and Angada explained the situation. Sugriva told Angada to bring Lakshmana immediately. "Why have you left him standing at the gates?" he demanded. "He should be offered every respect, even as much as myself." Angada, joined by Hanuman, quickly left to fetch Lakshmana. Within a few minutes, Lakshmana was led into Kishkindha by Angada and Hanuman. Still fuming, the prince surveyed the city. Great mansions and temples lined the wide avenues, each building set with celestial jewels of every description. The city was illuminated by jewels' glow. Rivulets flowed by the avenues and groves of trees grew here and there, yielding all kinds of delightful fruits. As he went along the main highway, Lakshmana saw large white palaces of the chief monkeys. They shone like clouds lit by the sun. Long wreaths of flowers hung from those palaces, and the scent of aloe and sandalwood issued from the latticed windows. Lakshmana was led into Sugriva's palace, the most magnificent of all. After passing through 7 heavily guarded gates, he entered Sugriva's inner chambers. Here and there were numerous gold and silver couches spread with costly silk covers. Many beautiful Vanara ladies wearing garlands and gold ornaments moved about, their anklets tinkling. As they reached Sugriva's private chambers, Lakshmana heard the strains of celestial music from within. He became even more annoyed with Sugriva. The insolent monkey was reviling while Rama suffered in agony. Lakshmana twanged his bowstring and the sound reverberated through the entire palace. Sugriva was startled. Realizing at once that Lakshmana had arrived, he spoke urgently to Tara, who sat by his side. Go quickly and greet Lakshmana. He will never display anger in presence of a woman. Pacify him with gentle words. Only then will I be able to face him. Tara rose and went out of the room. The gold string of her girdle hung loose and she tottered slightly from intoxication. Bending her slender body low, she covered her head with her cloth and respectfully greeted Lakshmana. As soon as he saw Tara, Lakshmana looked down modestly. His anger abated as Tara spoke gently. My lord, what gives rise to your angry mood? Who has disobeyed your order? Who has recklessly gone before a forest fire while it rushed towards a thicket of dry trees? Still annoyed, Lakshmana replied, this husband of yours appears to have forgotten his duty. He seems intent only on pursuing pleasures. 4 months have passed since Rama left, and we still see no signs of Sugriva keeping his word. He remains drunk here, enjoying with you, and unaware of the passage of time. O Tara, drinking is always condemned by the wise as the root of irreligion. Please remind Sugriva of his religious obligation. Tara begged Lakshmana to forgive Sugriva. After all, he was but a monkey. It was no surprise that he had fallen a victim to lust. Even the great sages in the forest were sometimes overcome by desire. What then of a monkey living amongst beautiful women? One under the sway of carnal desire loses all his sense of time and place. Forgetting his duty, he casts decorum to the winds and absorbs himself in pleasure. Tara told Lakshmana that Sugriva was regretful. He was always Rama's devoted servant and he longed to fulfill Rama's orders. Even now, he was waiting eagerly to speak to Lakshmana. Tara led Lakshmana to the Sugriva's chamber. As the prince entered the apartment, he saw Sugriva seated on a golden couch next to his wife Ruma. He was surrounded by youthful Vanara ladies adorned with shining jewels and heavenly garlands. His eyes were bloodshot and his limbs were smeared with sandal paste. Sugriva's costly silk garments hung loose on his powerful body and Vali's brilliant gold chain shone from his chest. Seeing Sugriva absorbed in sensual delights, Lakshmana's anger was rekindled. His eyes opened wide and his lips set in a firm line. The furious prince breathed heavily and wrung his hands, looking with blood-red eyes at Sugriva. The monkey king jumped from his couch, like a tall flag suddenly raised in honor of Indra. He went before Lakshmana with folded palms and bowed at his feet. Lakshmana addressed him in angry tones. Who's more hard-hearted than he who makes false promise to a friend, especially when that friend has done him a great favor? O Lord of monkeys, one who ungratefully fails to repay the service of friends deserves to be killed. Lakshmana quite forgot Rama's request at first to speak kindly to Sugriva. He glared at him. This selfish monkey deserved no pity. He lay here at ease while Rama was pining away. Lakshmana vented his fury, his voice thundering about Sugriva's spacious chambers. Ingratitude is the worst of all sins, O thoughtless one. You are lustful and a liar. You have achieved your own ends, made some empty promise, and then simply abandoned yourself to pleasure. Surely you will regret your omission when Rama's blazing arrow speeds towards you. Before long, you will meet with Vali again. Tara again beseeched Lakshmana to be patient. Sugriva was an ordinary being subject to the sway of his senses. No one could easily avert the strong urges of body. Even the great Vishwamitra had once lost himself in sexual pleasure for 100 years, thinking it to be a day. Sugriva had now been awakened to his duty. He had taken action and sent out many monkeys to raise an army to find Sita. Tara spoke passionately to angry Lakshmana. Vali told me that they are 100 million powerful Rakshasas in Lanka. These must be overcome if Ravana is to be defeated. Therefore, Sugriva is amassing a force sufficient to encounter all the Rakshasas. The army will soon be ready within some days. Do not be angry. The search for Sita will soon begin. Lakshmana was pacified when he heard that Sugriva had already made the arrangements. He nodded his head and relaxed. Seeing Lakshmana relaxing, Sugriva said, "Everything I have depends on Rama. How can I ever repay him? Rama alone is powerful enough to recover Sita and is merely using me as his instrument. This again is his kindness on me. I only wish to serve him in whatever way I can. Please forgive any transgression on my part, for there is no servant who is without fault." Lakshmana began to feel ashamed of his angry outburst. He spoke kindly to Sugriva. "With you as his supporter, my brother is blessed in every way, O gallant monkey. I feel sure he will soon destroy his enemy with your assistance. Please forgive my harsh words, for I am sorely afflicted by my brother's plight." Lakshmana asked Sugriva to come with him to see Rama. Sugriva immediately had a large palanquin fetched and he mounted it along with Lakshmana. Accompanied by Sugriva's ministers, they departed towards Prashravana. The golden palanquin, covered by a white canopy, was carried swiftly towards the mountain where Rama waited. Conches and kettle drums were sounded as the procession of monkeys moved in state. Sugriva was surrounded by many warlike monkeys, bearing weapons in their hands. He was fanned on both the sides by his servants and eulogized by bards as they traveled. They soon arrived at Rama's cave and Sugriva jumped from the palanquin and prostrated himself at Rama's feet, who lifted the monkey and embraced him with love. Rama seated Sugriva on the ground and sitting next to him spoke in a gentle voice. "A wise king is he who pursues in their proper order religion, wealth, and pleasure, allotting proper time to each. He who pursues only pleasure, neglecting the other two, wakes up after falling like one asleep on a treetop. The king who wins pious allies and destroys sinful foes gains great religious merit, O Sugriva. The time has come for you to make an effort for the merit. What then has been done, O King?" Sugriva replied that he was ever indebted to Rama for his kindness and for favor. The Vanara King explained that how he had dispatched thousands of monkeys to gather an army. Soon there would be millions of fierce monkeys, bears and baboons gathering at Kishkindha. All of them were sprung from the loins of gods and Gandharvas, and all were terrible warriors, capable of changing their forms at will. Sugriva would have at his command a vast army, countless in number. They would quickly find Ravana, completely uproot him, and recover Sita. Rama was delighted, and he looked at the blue lotus in full bloom. He embraced Sugriva tightly. "It's no surprise that one of your caliber renders such good to his friends. With you by my side, I shall easily conquer my enemies. O Sugriva, you are my greatest well-wisher and are fit to help me in every way." Rama and Sugriva discussed for some time, planning how to make their search. Sugriva then left to meet with his emissaries, who were returning with troops they had gathered. As millions of fierce monkey warriors came to Kishkindha, the earth vibrated. A massive dust cloud rose up and veiled the sun. The trees shook, sending down showers of leaves and blossoms. The entire region for miles became thickly populated with monkeys who looked like mountains. Some were golden-hued like rising sun, some were as red as copper, and others blue as the sky. Others were as white as the moon, and still others blackish like thunderclouds. All of them, like great mountain lions, had frightening teeth and claws. The troop leaders approached Sugriva and asked for his command. Sugriva took all of them and went again to Rama's presence. One by one, he introduced all the Vanara chiefs, and they bowed low at Rama's feet. Sugriva concluded, "These warriors are righteous, brave, and powerful. They can move on land, water, and through the air. They have conquered fatigue and are famous for their exploits. All of them have arrived, bringing thousands and millions of followers. O Rama, these Vanaras are ready to do your bidding. Please give them your command." Rama stood up and embraced Sugriva. "It must be ascertained whether or not still Sita lives. O noble one, find out where Ravana's land is located. Once we have this information, we shall then do what is necessary." Sugriva then assigned four parties to search the four directions. He gave detailed descriptions of the countries where they should look and then added, "This search should be conducted only over the next month. Then you should return. Anyone returning after a month will be subject to death. Rama and his great purpose should constantly be remembered by all of you. May success be yours." Sugriva had asked Hanuman to assist Angada in leading the search party to the south. This was the direction where Ravana would most likely be found, as he had been flying that way with Sita. Sugriva spoke with Hanuman just before he left. "There is nothing on the earth or in the heavens that can obstruct your movement. O valiant son of wind god, you are no less than your father in prowess. There is no created being on earth equal to you in strength and vigor. On you rests my main hope of finding Sita." Rama heard Sugriva speaking with Hanuman and he saw his eager expression. It was clear he was confident of success, as much as Sugriva was sure that his minister would find Sita. Rama was overjoyed. He went to Hanuman and gave the monkey a ring inscribed with his name. "Take this token, O jewel among monkeys, and show it to Sita. This will reassure her that I sent you. I feel sure you will see this princess." Hanuman took the ring and touched it to his head. He prostrated himself at Rama's feet and prayed for his blessings. Then, looking like the full moon surrounded by a galaxy of stars, he left with the party. The Vanaras and bears all left with great haste. Shouting and howling, thundering and roaring, growling and shrieking, they ran in four directions. The monkey chiefs cried out in different ways, "I shall destroy Ravana and bring back Sita. Single-handed, I shall kill that demon and rescue Janaka's daughter, even from the fires of hell. I shall smash down trees, cleave great mountains, and churn up the oceans. I will certainly find princes. I can leap across the sea a distance of 800 miles. I will bound up Mount Meru and enter the bowels of earth until Sita is found." While boasting of their power in this and other ways, the monkeys gradually disappeared. After monkeys had left, Rama spoke to Sugriva. "I was surprised to hear your extensive descriptions of this earth. How do you know it so well?" Sugriva replied that he had seen every part of the world while running away from Vali. "My angry brother chased me in all directions," he said. "As I dashed away in fear, I saw every part of the wide earth as if it were the impression of a calf's hoof. With Vali always behind me, I ran with tremendous speed. Finally, I remembered Matanga's curse and came to Rishyamukha, whereupon Vali left me alone." Rama laughed to hear Sugriva. The two friends sat speaking together for some time, and then Sugriva left Kishkinda to await the return of the search parties. Uh, Okay. The monkeys dispatched by Sugriva began their search. They scanned cities, towns, and villages. Scouring woods and forests, they climbed mountains and dived into lakes and rivers. They explored deep caverns and entered the holes in the earth. Going as far as possible in the directions they were assigned, they scrupulously searched everywhere for Ravana and Sita. Even after searching for a month, however, they were not successful. One by one, the parties returned, fearful, to Sugriva. From the north came Shatabali, disappointedly reporting his failure. Vinata returned from east, also without success. From the west came Sushena, again without having discovered Sita's whereabouts. In the south, Hanuman and Angada and their party had traveled a great distance. The month had almost passed, and still there was no sign of Sita. They reached the plains surrounding the Vindhya Mountains. It was a desolate region full of caves and thick forests, waterless and uninhabited. The whole area had been rendered a wilderness by the curse of a sage many years previous, who had been angered by his young son's death. Thousands of monkeys combed the entire terrain, penetrating more and more into the frightful area. They suddenly came upon a huge Rakshasa. Seeing the demon, who looked like a hill, the monkeys stood with their lions tightly girded, ready to fight. The demon saw the monkeys and bellowed, "You are gone!" Angada thought the demon to be Ravana. He became enraged and rushed straight towards the roaring Rakshasa, who raised his massive hand to strike the monkey. Angada leapt high and dodged the blow. Swinging his powerful arm as he flew, the Vanara hit Rakshasa on the head with its outstretched palm. The blow was tremendous, and the demon vomited blood and fell to ground. After examining the dead Rakshasa and realizing that it was not Ravana, the monkeys continued their search. The vast Vindhyan range was filled with innumerable caves. The monkeys systematically entered each and every one of them. They climbed every mountain and scoured all the woods and groves. Gradually, they moved further and further south. Not finding Ravana or Sita anywhere, they became more and more fatigued and disappointed. The month allotted by Sugriva passed, and still they had no clue as to where Sita had been taken. One day, they were exhausted and racked by thirst. They came upon to an entrance to a huge cavern. They saw birds emerging from it with their wings dripping with water. The monkeys decided to enter the dark cave. They formed a long 8-mile chain to avoid getting lost. Bats shrieked and birds flew past them. Occasionally, the growl of a lion or tiger was heard. As they went deeper into the cave, they saw ahead of them a bright light. They moved quickly towards the light and came upon a huge open area, brilliantly lit by thousands of shining golden trees. The trees, which were adorned with brightly colored flowers and leaves, and they bore fruits which shone like rubies and emeralds. The trees hemmed in large lotus ponds of a clear water filled with golden fish. The monkeys saw palaces of gold and silver set with cat's eyes gems and covered with lattices of pearls. On all sides were spacious couches and seats studded with various kinds of gems. Mounds of gold and silver vessels lay here and there, as well as piles of colored jewels. There were collections of sandalwood and aloe carvings, as well as many first-class palanquins lying about. Piles of costly ethereal textiles of indescribable beauty lay on the floor. Celestial food and drink of every kind were spread on gold tables, and there were dazzling heaps of golds everywhere. The monkeys were stunned by the sight, and they stood looking at all around, their mouths hanging open. Then they saw an ascetic lady clad in black deerskins sitting some distance from them. She shone with yogic power as she sat in meditation. Hanuman approached her and respectfully inquired who she was and in whose cave they now found themselves. The woman's name was Swayamprabha, and she explained that the cave and all of its wonders had been created by Maya, the architect of celestial demons. He had dwelt there for some time, being finally slain by Indra for sake of an Apsara whom Indra himself had coveted. The Apsara had lived in the cave with Swayamprabha as her servant. She had now returned to heaven, leaving Swayamprabha to her meditations. The ascetic lady gazed at the monkeys. She could understand that they were Rama's servants. She had seen Rama in her meditations and understood his divine identity. She was pleased to have the opportunity to serve Rama by entertaining his servants. The yogini gave monkeys delicious foods and drinks which had invigorated them. As they ate, they told her of their mission. When they had finished eating, the hermitess asked them to close their eyes and she would take them out of the cave. The monkeys complied, and in a moment they mysteriously found themselves again standing at the entrance to the cavern. Swayamprabha told them to continue their search and then took her leave, disappearing back inside. The monkeys stood outside the cave, amazed but refreshed from their celestial repast. They carried on vigorously searching and soon reached the southern ocean. Realizing that they had looked everywhere in the whole southern region without success, they fell prey to anxiety. It was now more than 6 weeks since they had left. The monkeys were fearful of Sugriva's anger when they returned, and they sat together discussing what to do. Angada spoke, "The king will certainly have us all put to death upon our late return, unsuccessful in our mission. Therefore, I suggest, rather than return in shame, we sit here, fast until the life leaves our bodies. How can we go back and face execution in front of our near and dear ones?" Some of the monkeys agreed, and others recommended that they continue searching for some time before giving up. One of them suggested that they enter Swayamprabha's caves and live out the rest of their days happily. This met with approval from other monkeys, but Hanuman disagreed. "I don't approve of this course of action, O Vanaras," he chided, "forgetting our master's cause and actually forming an enmity by abandoning him is not at all a wise move. Nor will Rama or Lakshmana tolerate it. Those princes will tear Maya's cave asunder in no time. Their arrows fall with the force of Indra's thunderbolts. All of us will be annihilated." Hanuman continued to speak, praising Sugriva's qualities. "We need not fear the monkey king. He regards all his subjects with love and would be harsh and would not certainly kill Angada, the son of his dear wife Tara. Nor will Sugriva be harsh towards you, others. We have all tried our best to find Sita and should now return to Kishkindha, reporting to the king for further orders." Angada did not appreciate Hanuman's speech. He especially disliked hearing Sugriva praised. The monkey prince became angry. "No good qualities are to be found in Sugriva. Indeed, that worthless monkey has taken to wife his mother in shape of Tara. He locked up my father in a cave and usurped his kingdom. Although Rama rendered him a great favor, that ungrateful wretch soon forgot his debt to the prince of Ayodhya. What piety does he possess? He only instigated the search for Sita out of fear for Lakshmana." Angada still burnt within from the killing of his father brought about by Sugriva. How could Sugriva ever be kind to the son of his mortal enemy? Now there would be more than sufficient excuse to punish Angada, who had failed in his mission and has committed treason by sowing dissension among other monkeys. He was sure that Sugriva would either kill him outright or cast him into the chains for the rest of his life. Angada determined to sit there on the beach and fast until death. He sank to the ground weeping, his mind confounded by grief and despair. With the exception of Hanuman, the other monkeys sat next to him, denouncing Sugriva and praising Vali. They all sat on Kusha grass with their faces turned to east. Thinking of Sugriva's fury and Rama's prowess, they prepared for death. As they sat there roaring in dismay, they suddenly saw an enormous bird come out of the mountain. The bird looked upon the line of monkeys appearing like a row of mountain peaks on the plateau beneath him. Realizing that they were observing the praya woe of fasting until death, he said to himself, "Surely this food has been ordained for me by Providence. After a long time, I shall eat sumptuously, feasting upon this line of monkeys one by one as they fall dead from starvation." The bird dropped down and perched near the monkeys. Seeing him there, Angada turned to Hanuman and said, "Surely this is Yamaraja come in person to punish us for failing us to serve Rama's purpose. This bird reminds me of Jatayu, about whom we have heard from Sugriva. That glorious bird laid down his life for Rama in a fierce battle with Ravana. We shall also now give up our lives in Rama's service. Alas, like that heroic vulture, we too have failed to save Sita." That great bird heard him speak. He called out to Angada, "Who is this who mentions Jatayu? Where is that younger brother of mine? I have not seen him for so long. My heart trembles as I speak to you of his death. How did he encounter the king of Rakshasas? If it pleases you, O monkey, pray tell me everything you know." The bird told them that his name was Sampati. He lived high in mountains, unable to fly because his wings had been burnt by the sun. He had lost his touch with brother Jatayu for many years. Angada told the bird everything about himself and his companions. He narrated the story of how Jatayu had died protecting Sita. Now they were searching for princess and had given up hope. Thus they sat there, fearful of Sugriva and Rama, and awaiting only death. Sampati cried out in anguish. His eyes filled with tears, and he said to Angada, "Jatayu was dearer to me than my own life. Now he is killed by the Rakshasa, and I can do nothing to avenge him. Oh monkeys, I am old and worn out. What then can I do upon hearing this terrible news?" Sampati explained how a long time ago he had flown with Jatayu to heaven. "As we soared upwards, we perceived the earth with her numerous mountains, as if she were covered with pebbles. Her rivers looked like so many threads. Great cities seemed like chariot wheels, and forests like grassy plots." Tears fell from Bird's eyes as he recounted how he lost his brother. "We had wanted to follow the sun as it coursed through the heavens. When we reached the track of the fiery globe, however, we became overpowered by its rays. Jatayu had grown weak from heat and exhaustion. I therefore covered him with my wings to protect him. We then fell back to earth, where we became separated. I fell onto Vindhya Mountain with my wings completely destroyed by the scorching rays of sun." Angada looked at the wingless bird. He must know all the regions of the universe. Surely he knew where Ravana lived. Perhaps there was still hope. The Vanara asked Sampati, "Can you tell us where lies the abode of that vilest of all beings, Ravana?" Sampati had slumped down in sorrow. But upon hearing Angada's question, he lifted his head and opened his eyes, wide his eyes. "Although I am old and useless bird, I can still render some service to Ram. If only with my speech. I do indeed know where Ravana lives. In fact, as I lay upon this mountain some while back, I saw him flying by, holding Sita. The princess was constantly crying out, 'Rama! Oh Rama! Lakshmana! Help!'" The bird told Angada that Ravana dwelt in Lanka, which was situated in the midst of the southern ocean 800 miles away. The princess was being held captive in Rama's garden, guarded by fierce Rakshasis. Sampati possessed the ability to see Lanka even as he spoke to monkeys. He said, "Although my wings are broken, my vision is not impaired. We vultures are capable of sighting objects at great distances. Furthermore, by my intuition, I can understand that one of you will soon see Sita, and then you will return again to Rama's presence. Let's stop now. All right. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here and we'll continue. For those who are still thirsting and who like kind of, oh, that's it, and we'll definitely have more sessions of Ramayana reading, and we'll try to do Ramayana before the Ram Navami. For those who are not aware, the Ram Navami is going to fall on the Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, and we'll have the program in the temple starting at 6. So please do come. And thank you so much for all the patience and all the kind hearing you have been giving. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srivas Pandit Prabhu Ki.
Jai.
So we'll have Aarti next, and what we should do before that starts is to put all these books away so we can prepare for that. Thank you very much.